Well, this is the third week of our message series for the season of Advent that we're calling It's a Wonderful Life. Advent is supposed to be about hope, a time when we're supposed to feel merry and bright. But unfortunately, we live in a world that is worried about many things. Anxiety levels are off the charts. The economy, war in Ukraine, gun violence, radical politics, on and on, other current events have robbed even some optimistic people of hope for the future. But as we've been saying throughout this series, hope is essential to human existence. We can't really live without it. And so this series is about where we can find hope in this world, no matter what else is happening around us. And we've started looking at several places where we can find hope at all times. And in the first week of the series, we said that one source of hope that will never fail us is the promise that Christ will return to earth one day. For some of us, it's a little scary, perhaps daunting. Maybe we procrastinate, we put it off. It doesn't seem like it's going to happen. But the truth is, if we believe in Christ, we can believe and have hope that he's going to come again and make everything right, and that better days are ahead for this world. And in the meantime, we can live like people with hope and spread that hope to others. Then last week, we looked at another place where we can find hope, and that is in messages from God. God is always sending little messengers into our lives. Maybe it's in the scripture, maybe it's an uplifting word from a stranger, maybe it's some other sign that encourages you. And God has always sent messengers of hope to encourage his people throughout the history of the church. And as we said last week, we think that this local church is one of those messengers of hope, because every day we work to bring hope to people. And when you invest in the work of this parish, you are sending a message of hope that this work is going to continue. And we talked about stewardship last week and making a faith commitment, basically just filling out a card, a physical card or online, saying, committing to what you are going to give to this parish in the coming year. A lot of you have already turned in your cards. Thank you so much. If you haven't yet had a chance to do that, you can do it online, or you can pick up a card at the welcome desk in the back of the church. Also, speaking about being messengers of hope, there's another way you can do that. Every year, we give away Safeway gift cards to people who are in need, people in our local area who need help with buying food for their holiday table. And so if you're able to get a $50 Safeway gift card and bring it back to us no later than December 13th, if you haven't already, that would be great. Or you can just give online at sthillary.org/give. Now tonight I want to talk with you about a third place that we can always find hope, a third source of hope. And that place, that source of hope, is the bedrock belief that God has a plan, that even in the midst of all the chaos and craziness in this world and the weirdness in our own lives sometimes, God is somehow going to work it out in the end. That God has a plan for everything, and that each and every one of us is an integral part of that plan, because your life matters. Your life matters, and that's definitely a source of hope. Now, for some people, that may sound a little trite, especially if you're struggling right now. A lot of people struggle during the holidays. And it's easy to start questioning whether God is really in control when problems come into our lives, when tragedy strikes. And we see that with John the Baptist in the gospel story tonight. He began to doubt. If you remember last week in the gospel, John the Baptist was so sure of himself. For him, there was no doubt. There was no doubt that God's plan of salvation was about to be accomplished. Crowds had flocked to John the Baptist in the desert to hear his message of hope about Jesus coming. But now Jesus was not so sure. See, he had been arrested and put in prison, and his faith began to waver. Was Jesus really the Messiah? Had he, in fact, come to deliver Israel from Roman rule? Was God's plan ever going to work out in the end? And in the midst of so much doubt, John sent his disciples out to Jesus with this question: Are you the one we've been waiting for, or do we need to start looking for someone else? You see how that question is laden with doubt? John doubted. And God's plan doesn't always make sense to us either, because it unfolds gradually. It's revealed a little at a time. It's rarely a straight shot to a clear goal. In fact, God's plan is very much like a tapestry. I love this analogy. In this life, all we can see is the backside of that tapestry, which looks like a bunch of jumbled colored threads with no order or logic to their arrangement. But when you turn that tapestry over, you can see that it's actually a beautiful image. That's the way God's plan works out. We don't understand it now, but one day we will. The frequent setbacks, frustrations, and disappointments of this life can make God's plan look confusing, so much so that it's sometimes easy to doubt whether there actually is a larger design. But on that day when everything is fully revealed, God's plan will be obvious. Every doubt will be removed. Every adversity we faced will finally make sense. And then we'll see that the obstacles we encountered, the disappointments that came our way, the failures we experienced were actually turning points in God's plan for our lives. A tragic death, for example, opens the door to spiritual renewal. A job loss leads the way to a more fulfilling career. Failure at school makes possible a new direction in life. A nasty divorce produces a second chance at love. But in the moment, when we're suffering, it's hard to see that God is actually moving us closer to the goal, closer to success. And I think that sometimes we doubt God's plan because we doubt ourselves. We don't think God cares about us. We're not worthy of his love, we think. And long ago, the Jewish people doubted themselves in just that way. They had indulged in the worship of false gods. They had created an unjust society. They had weakened themselves from within and therefore became vulnerable from attacks by foreign powers. It created a perfect storm of self-doubt, and they were unable to see any future for themselves as God's people. And maybe you felt that way at some point. I have, like God has given up on you. But look at what the prophet Isaiah said to his people. Be strong. Do not fear. Your God comes with vindication and recompense. He comes to save you. In other words, you are worth saving. Don't doubt yourself. Isaiah promised God's discouraged people that if he can transform a desert into springs of water, he could transform their hearts. If God can make the blind to see, the deaf hear, the mute speak, the lame walk again, he could restore them to health and wholeness. Isaiah assures the people that when the Messiah comes, every doubt will be removed, despair will turn to joy, discouragement will be replaced with joy and hope. And maybe that could be true for you. If you're one of those people, if you're in that season of life where you're doubting yourself, you're doubting your relationship with God, I want to tell you that as you grow in faith, as you persevere in that relationship, you can overcome that sense of self-doubt more and more. And when you do, you'll begin to find hope in God's plan. I think there's a second reason that some of us doubt God's plan, and that's because we mistake it for our own. This is my favorite problem. This is a problem that I have. I've been talking to you about this movie, It's a Wonderful Life, right? Our message series is named after this. It's a classic holiday film. It's the number one Christmas movie of all time. It's on the cover of Life magazine this month. You should watch it if you haven't already. Jimmy Stewart plays a man named George Bailey. And the movie opens when George was a young boy. And like most young people, he had big plans for his life. He wanted to travel and explore the world. He wanted to build buildings and construct cities. He wanted to do, quote, something big, something important. And he thought he knew what he was going to do tomorrow and the next day after that. But then, when his father suffered a stroke, George reluctantly agreed to take over the Building and Loan Association that his father had founded. That was just supposed to be temporary, until his younger brother Harry came home from college. But then Harry goes off and he marries a woman whose father gives him a job somewhere else. And now George is completely frustrated. He's stuck in this job and he yells at his girlfriend, "I want to do what I want to do." How many times have you said that to someone or to yourself? And it definitely wasn't, what he wanted to do definitely wasn't running his father's business. But he persevered, he kept at it, and he sacrificed his honeymoon to handle a problem at the bank. And then later, Harry, his younger brother, goes off to fight in the war, and he comes home a war hero, while George remains stuck in a job he hates. It was one disappointment after another. And then on Christmas Eve, when a large bank deposit was lost, George comes home completely distraught. He grumbles about living in a, quote, measly, crummy old town and a drafty old barn of a house with a bunch of noisy kids constantly underfoot. George Bailey had a plan for his life. He had mapped it out completely. And when it didn't happen as he had expected, he grew resentful. And he lost hope. See, our plan is rarely God's plan. And John the Baptist had a hard time seeing that in the darkness of his prison cell. John the Baptist had a plan for the Messiah. He expected the Messiah to come and liberate the Jewish people from Roman occupation. But that's not what God's plan turned out to be. Jesus wasn't raising armies. He was going around healing people. And when John saw this, he's like, what happened to the plan? So when John's disciples came to Jesus and asked him if he was the Messiah, notice what Jesus says to them. Go and tell John what you hear and see. The blind regain their sight, the lame walk, lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, the poor have the good news proclaimed to them. In other words, all his achievements up to that point point to the fact that he is the Messiah. He had performed all those miracles already in his ministry. So why would John doubt? Why would he doubt? And you know, the signs of God's plan are right in front of us and all around us. But we often miss them because we're focused on the way we think things should be, and frustrated over our own failed plans. We misunderstand God's plan because we keep clinging to our own. Well, there's one more obstacle that I think that keeps some of us from trusting in God's plan. Sometimes we doubt God's plan because we feel trapped by our circumstances. Most of you know that I was a lawyer before I became a priest. And I want you to know that I knew the law was the wrong profession for me from the very first week of law school. I remember the moment vividly. I was in a first-year torts class. We were in the middle of a raging debate about some case. Someone had just made a very assertive, aggressive, powerful argument. And I thought, this is going to be my life. But I kept plowing through because I didn't think I could or should get out of it. I was already so far in. I had paid the student. I had taken out student loans. I had incurred the fees. I felt trapped. I felt trapped, and I didn't think there was a way out of it. So I just kept plowing through, all the way through law school, through 7 years of law practice, until finally I accepted the fact that my plan wasn't God's plan. You know, I was at dinner one night with some parishioners recently who told me that a while back they used to put a shock collar on their dog so that he would stay in the yard. And I know that's not really correct these days, but back then a lot of people were doing it. Anyway, the shock collar would shock the dog with a minor shock whenever he got a little too far away from where he was supposed to be. Well, eventually they removed the collar, but guess what? The dog still stayed in the yard. He didn't think he could escape. Psychologists call this assumed constraint. It's the false belief that our past determines our future, when in reality, it is fear that keeps us constrained. It is fear that prevents us from freely following where Jesus wants us to go. You know, after John's disciples left and went back to tell John what Jesus had said, Jesus began to speak to the crowds about John. Now, there's something very interesting here. Jesus makes it clear that John the Baptist was not some politician just trying to please people like a reed swaying in the wind. He was not some pampered prince lounging around in fine clothing. He was not just any prophet. He was more than a prophet. Why did Jesus say that? That John was more than a prophet? Well, it's because John stood on the cusp of the old and the new. He was the last of the Old Testament prophets, and therefore the greatest of those prophets, because he was announcing the coming of Jesus. But then Jesus says, the least person in the kingdom of heaven is greater than John. It sounds like an insult, but Jesus was making a point that salvation history had reached a turning point when John announced the arrival of Jesus. There were so many greater things to come in God's plan. And you too can turn a corner in your life. If you feel stuck right now, you can turn a corner in your life when you begin to trust more fully, more freely in God's plan for you. You are not trapped. You are not constrained, because God is in control. Now, maybe the Lord is inviting you into some totally different set of circumstances, maybe a move or a job change or something that frightens you, like a loved one who has fallen ill and things don't look good. Maybe none of that is happening to you, and maybe just God wants you to break out of your own self-doubt, your own misunderstanding of his plan, or your own feeling of being trapped in your circumstances. Whatever it is that you need to do to follow and trust, to trust in and follow God's plan more fully, we need hope. Hope is at the bottom of all of it. And so today after Mass, we're inviting you over to our parish hall, which is right next door, for just 5 or 10 minutes to create an ornament for our Christmas tree. We've been doing it all day long, and people have been creating these beautiful ornaments. On the ornament, you'll just write what your personal hope is for the coming year. No one will know it's you. We'll just hang it on the tree. And I just ask that you make the hope, that the hope that you write on that ornament is something that is personal to you. It could be anything. You know, it could be that your loved one regains her health, or that your kids start talking to you again, or that your grandchildren are protected. Make it specific to your life. And as you do that, I invite you to say a prayer that you'll have the strength to never, ever lose hope in God's plan for your life. Because I can tell you from personal experience, whenever you follow that plan, it will absolutely, positively be a wonderful life for you.